Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
How to. We are back on the Andy Finn Show. Today is Monday, the 3rd, the 3rd of March. And March, folks, has come in like a lion, and it's going out like a lamb, we hope. And when I say coming in like a lion, since it was 62 degrees today in the greater Washington area, what I mean is coming in like a lion that lays there at the zoo in front of their cage, in the sun, soaking up the rays, and can't be bothered to sit up, notice people, or look tough, because that's the way winter's coming into March in this area of the country. On the 3rd, this is the day that the first judge the impeachment trial of a U.S. judge first began. There'd never been an impeachment trial of a U.S. judge. Think about this. What year do you think we impeached the first judge? If you consider that 1889 is roughly the start of the onion. Now, 1803, we impeached the first judge or started the trial. And interestingly, his name was John Pickering. Interesting, because there was a Pickering that Bush wanted to put on the bench that I don't think he ever made it in the last couple of years. And in 1817, the first commercial steamboat route was opened. And it went from New Orleans to Louisville. So up the Mississippi. I'm going to tackle a couple of issues in this next segment. And the first thing we're going to start with is the issue, the biggest issue when it comes to science these days. Now, I can think of two or three issues that are embroiled in political debates within the scientific community. I'm sorry, I don't mean within the scientific community. There's hundreds and hundreds of issues that are embroiled in scientific debates in the scientific literature. I mean, in the world of politics, there's only two or three issues that people seem to have trouble with. And one of them is well known. It's global warming. And I'd have to say that if you're going to pick something to argue about, you know, I'm always curious as to why people don't have a problem with plate tectonics or cell theory or some other model, even gravity, then they pick on something that it has a political dimension like this, and they give it a political dimension. But fair enough, you could argue that we aren't certain about global warming. I mean, 99% of the scientists are on one side, less than 1% are on the other side. And yet, you could make the argument that, okay, even scientists aren't absolutely certain. They've got a lot of evidence. They've got thousands of studies in multiple lines of literature that all point in pretty much the same direction, which is why we have these consensus reports coming out from international bodies of scientists. But I will grant you that this issue is it's still worth collecting data about. Of course, any issue you can argue is worth collecting data about, even the theory of gravity, or the law of gravity, as some people call it. But I got to say that of all the scientific issues to pick a bone with, evolution should be the last one that people find fault with. And we've explained why on this show before, but it turns out that Ben Stein has a new movie coming out in less than a month, and it's called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Now, let me give you some background. You may know Ben Stein from Win Ben Stein's Money. He's quite knowledgeable. He has a lot of facts at his disposal. And so he would challenge people in Jeopardy type or the old television show 21 type situations where you answer a series of questions. And if you could beat Ben Stein, if you could answer more questions than he could, you win some of his money. Now, he could usually answer 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 relatively tough questions. And the other person had to answer the same questions. And he didn't get beat very often. He's pretty smart. So I was surprised to see the level of ignorance that he displays in taking on this debate. Now, the movie, I haven't seen the movie yet. There's only clips out there on the internets. But basically, he interviews various, I guess they're academics, people that teach in universities. I can't tell whether they were on tenure track. I can't tell if they had tenure. I can't even tell if they publish in the relevant literature having to do with human evolution. But the clips I saw show these people complaining that if you come out and say anything against evolution, if you even question it, you are fired or expelled. Now, never mind that the university doesn't operate exactly that way. I'll take it at face value that these people feel persecuted for their views. Right? Well, I say I take it at face value that they may be English professors for all I know, and talking to their English classes about evolution, I assume they are in the general area of the physical sciences, but I don't have any evidence of that yet. I'm not going to focus on that here. What I want to focus on is the conversations that Ben Stein has been having with people about this. And so I've got a couple of clips, one from when he was on Bill O'Reilly's show previewing this movie last October, and another one when he was on Glenn Beck's show previewing it in November. So let's start in, and let's just let O'Reilly and Ben Stein hold forth on science and evolution, a subject about which both of them are pretty ignorant, frankly.
In the Unresolved Problems segment tonight, how did life on Earth begin? Religious people believe a higher power created the universe. Secular progressives say all kinds of things, but God is not in the equation.
So one question is why he chooses to say secular progressives. This really should be about science, okay? Not secular progressives. There are plenty of religious people who are scientists. So already O'Reilly is conflating two issues, what he calls secular progressives, progressives being the label that liberals like for themselves these days, and secular being, I guess, liberals who aren't religious, and there's a percentage of them that aren't religious. Okay.
Darwin was a brilliant guy. But it didn't say how life began. It didn't say how the cell got to have hundreds of thousands of moving parts, each of which has to work perfectly.
You know what? I figured out I'm going to start this over. We're going to listen to this boy again.
In the Unresolved Problems segment tonight, how did life on Earth begin? Religious people believe a higher power created the universe. Secular progressives say all kinds of things, but God is not in the equation.
Well, let's repeat. So what? One of the interesting things O'Reilly's doing here is this should be a discussion about science if he's bringing Ben Stein on to talk about science, and yet O'Reilly is contrasting the view of religious people who have faith that God did it. We'll call that the magic explanation, because science has nothing to say about magic or divine intervention. It can't possibly address that. But O'Reilly contrasts the religious position with secular progressives, not with the scientific position. Progressive is the term that most liberals like to call themselves these days, since conservatives have made liberal a dirty word. O'Reilly tacks on secular, even though, you know, there are plenty of liberals that are religious. Let's let him continue.
And some believe those who subscribe to intelligent design, that is a deity, created life, are being persecuted in America. Joining us now from Washington, Ben Stein, who has put together a new documentary called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, the film set to open in the theaters this coming February. So what's the issue in your mind?
Well, the issue is that Darwinism, which was a brilliant theory and a great, great relic of the age of imperialism in the 19th century, basically said that mankind evolved from apes and monkeys and from cells and so forth.
Okay, I have to stop there on a couple of scores. So this is too weird for thinking about, in that what are we talking about here? Ben Stein has just messed up several issues. Let's start with one of them. He just said that man, that Darwinism said man evolved from apes. No! Darwinism says that essentially, or evolution says that man and the ape have a common ancestry. Right? Very different, but those subtleties are lost if you don't understand science. The second thing was, he said that he's trying to make the case here over the next couple of minutes that Darwinism is a quaint theory, and it was good for its time. It was brilliant for its time, which would have been the 1830s and 40s and 50s. But that essentially we passed it by with knowledge, which I will demonstrate over the next couple segments, that is incorrecto, Mr. Stein. You are wrong. You win no money. But what was interesting was he said it was a relic of the imperialist, the age of imperialism. I think what he means is the age of enlightenment, right? Because enlightenment is the rise of science. And we're talking the 1700s, the 1800s. And, of course, it's where science took its place alongside religion as a way of knowing things. And it proved to be better at knowing things about the physical world than the church was, and so people started believing scientists more than church elders in various churches when it came to how the planets worked, how the body worked, how plants and animals worked. Because we got medicine, we got engineering, we got all these things out of science. So the Age of Enlightenment is partly science. It's also the rise of democracies, the rise of thought, the rise of freedom. All of these things are characterized as the Age of Enlightenment in the, I'll say, 1700s, 1800s, and on. And Stein calls it the Age of Imperialism, and I'm not sure. I don't think he means that. In any case, let's let him continue with the error of his ways.
And that's a brilliant proposition. Darwin was a brilliant guy. But it didn't say how life began. It didn't say how the cell got to have hundreds of thousands of moving parts, each of which has to work perfectly. It said maybe life was created by lightning striking a mud puddle.
Okay, well, let me hold on to lightning striking a mud puddle for a minute. It is true that the evolution of the species does not say how life began. But, of course, the theory of creation and the story in the Bible, the reason I refer to it as magic here is that science doesn't have anything to say about a supreme being. It can't possibly, because it's not observable. Science deals with empirical evidence, evidence here in the physical realm. God is not in the physical realm, so science can't address God, either say anything positive or negative about God. It just can't possibly know God. It also can't possibly know magic. Right? Magic is outside the realm of science. That's why I'm saying they're both in the same category. They're both outside of science. Now, what's interesting is that he's saying, because evolution doesn't explain the origin of life. No, the Big Bang theory comes much closer to explaining the origin of the universe and therefore the origin of life than does the evolution of the species. So he's criticizing a theory for not being all-encompassing and covering everything, like the creation of the universe, when in fact, of course, Genesis does cover both the creation of the universe and the creation of life. Very different concepts. Then he goes on to say that evolution might think that lightning struck a mud puddle and that's how life got here. No, it's much more complex than that. Let's move back from the evolution of life or the species to just the evolution of the universe. One of the things that scientists know about the universe is that the most common element in the universe is hydrogen, and the second most common is helium. Well, what's interesting about that is that the hydrogen atom has a atomic weight of 1 and helium is 2. So what they've discovered is that as elements got more complex, the higher the number of the element, the less there is in general. Now, it's true that with oxygen and nitrogen and certain things, which oxygen has an atomic weight of 8 on the periodic table of the elements, if you know your chemistry or remember any of it, And it's more common than some of the other elements that have fewer. So it's not an exact one-to-one match. But the point is that one of the ways they can tell how the universe has evolved is where they find heavier elements, elements that go beyond hydrogen and helium, the metals, the gases, the everything right up through uranium and the radioactive elements. And it turns out that there's a neat order to all of this, and scientists can look backwards and determine things about the universe by looking at the mix of elements that are in any given star or any given planet or any given galaxy. So it isn't about lightning striking a mud puddle. Of course, now he's moving on to life and the primordial soup. And it is true. Science doesn't know certain things. Science doesn't know for sure how the Big Bang came about. String theory and multidimensional views of the universe are have some current credence, but they don't know for sure. But that doesn't mean that you have to resort to magic. Science isn't never going to say it was magic or it was a supreme being, because it can't address magic and it can't address a theological answer, a supernatural answer, because that's outside the realm of what science does. So if you want to say science is limited in what it can address, absolutely. You won't get any argument from scientists on that. Let's let Ben Stein continue.
That has never struck me as convincing. And I thought there are a lot of gaps in Darwinism. Intelligent design is an effort to try to fill in some of those gaps. It might be totally wrong, but at least it's an effort to try to fill in some very obvious gaps.
All right.
Okay, so he's claiming that there's gaps in evolution. Absolutely. And that intelligent design is an effort to fill in those gaps. No, it is not. So let's talk about the nature of science and a theory, right? When you put forth a theory, what you're doing is you're saying, I think this is a model in the world of ideas of how things work in the real world, and now I'm going to test that theory. So evolution is a model in the world of ideas, in the mind, about how things work in the real world. And Darwin said there's a fundamental concept here. Things evolve, and there are mutations, et cetera, et cetera. Without going into the nuts and bolts of it, it is true that there are many pieces missing. But theories are never absolutely true or absolutely false. Okay, they are an approximation of how things work in the physical world. So imagine a theory being like a coat rack, and you've got a big wall in a big room, and there's all these hooks on the coat rack. And there are millions of pieces of data that scientists collect from geological records, archaeological records, from biology, from the history of plants, from fossils, all of this stuff. And as they get each of these pieces of data, like the periodic table of the elements, although not quite so neatly the way that one works out, they take all these pieces of data and they say, oh, this one goes here, this one goes here, this makes sense, this fits with the theory, and they put millions of pieces of data up on the coat rack, and they begin to get a picture of how things work. And what they discover is that a particular theory, in this case the evolution of the species, that it satisfies or it answers or it predicts much of the available data. And so they say, you know, this is the best approximation we have. This is the best model we have for predicting and understanding and making sense of what we observe out here in the physical world. And so Darwin's theory was brilliant, and over the decades and over the century and a half since he proposed The Origin of the Species, wrote the book The Origin of the Species and proposed the evolution of the species, scientists have added more and more data, and it's such a strong model, and it accounts for so much of the evidence that we see around us, both in the historical record and the current record, that virtually every scientist in the world, and by that I mean 99.99% of scientists in the various fields of relevant to evolution, biology and all the related life sciences, 99.99% of the scientists accept that evolution is not just the best approximation, the best theory to account for the evidence that we have, and there are millions and millions of pieces of evidence that have been fit on this coat rack of the theory of evolution. Now, it's not just the best theory. It's the only theory. It's the only model we have that adequately deals with all the evidence. Having started down this road, we're going to take a short break and remind you that you're listening to WEBR Radio and The Andy Finn Show.